They called it impossible, an enslaved people rising, organizing, fighting, and winning. Not a revolt that burned out, but a revolution that rewrote the world's balance of power. In 1791, the richest colony on Earth exploded. Plantations burned. Armies formed where chains had been. Men and women who had been counted as property began making decisions about war, land, and freedom. Europe watched in disbelief, then in fear. What followed was not just a fight against slavery. It was a challenge to every empire built on it. France, Britain, Spain, all tested, all forced to respond. Haiti did what no enslaved population had ever done before. It defeated its masters. It declared itself free. And then came the punishment. Isolation, debt, invasion, sabotage dressed as diplomacy, freedom treated as a crime that demanded repayment. This is not just the story of a revolution. It is the story of what happens after the world loses control and decides never to forgive it. Chapter 1. Setup and Stakes. Before the uprising, Saint-Domingue was not just a colony, it was the engine of the French Empire. Sugar and coffee flowed out of its ports in endless volume. Wealth crossed the Atlantic daily. Paris depended on it. European markets depended on it. The modern world's appetite for sweetness was fed by this land. The cost was human. Enslaved Africans made up the vast majority of the population. They worked under a system designed to extract labor until bodies failed. Death rates were so high that constant replacement was expected. Life was measured in seasons, not years. Society was rigid and violent. White planters held power. Free people of color lived in a narrow space between privilege and persecution. The enslaved lived at the bottom, policed by terror. Law was not neutral. It existed to protect property. Human beings were defined as things. Across the ocean, France was tearing itself apart. Revolution had broken out in 1789. Kings fell. Assemblies argued. Rights were declared and retracted. Liberty became a word shouted in streets and printed on banners. But those words did not cross the sea equally. In Saint-Domingue, the contradictions were impossible to hide. A colony built on slavery was tied to a nation claiming universal freedom. Free people of color demanded rights promised in France. White planters demanded autonomy to protect slavery. The enslaved watched all of it closely. They had always watched. Information traveled in whispers. News passed between plantations. African religious practices preserved memory and coordination. Resistance never disappeared. It adapted. It waited. In August 1791, waiting ended. On the night of a Vodou ceremony at Bois Caiman, enslaved leaders gathered. The meeting was spiritual, but it was also strategic. Oaths were taken. Plans were set. What followed was not spontaneous chaos. It was organized violence aimed at a system. Plantations burned across the northern plain. Cane fields went up in flames. Mills were destroyed. The wealth of the colony became smoke. Enslaved workers turned fighters, moved with speed and purpose. Weapons were seized. Patrols were ambushed. Within weeks, the colonial order was broken. France was not prepared. Colonial administrators argued among themselves. White militias were outnumbered. Free people of color fought for recognition while trying to survive. The enslaved controlled territory. Armies began to form. This was not a single revolt. It was many actions converging. Leaders emerged because they could organize, discipline, and adapt. Among them was Toussaint Louverture. He had been enslaved, freed, educated, and observant. He understood European warfare and African survival. He learned quickly. The stakes escalated fast. Spain and Britain watched closely. Both wanted the colony weakened. Both saw opportunity. Arms and alliances shifted. Enslaved fighters negotiated with empires that had once enslaved them. Survival required pragmatism. France responded by sending forces and issuing decrees. Commissioners arrived promising reforms. At times, abolition was discussed as a tactic, not a belief. Control mattered more than principle. The fighting was brutal, but not reckless. Discipline became the difference between survival and collapse. Armies that held together gained ground. Those that fractured disappeared. Louverture's forces learned to move, supply, and command. Disease became a silent weapon. Yellow fever tore through European troops unfamiliar with the climate. Entire units collapsed without battle. The land itself resisted occupation. By the mid-1790s, France made a choice it never intended to make. Slavery was abolished in the colony, not out of moral clarity, but necessity. Freedom was offered to keep control. The revolution shifted again. Formerly enslaved people now fought as soldiers of the French Republic. Louverture became a general. Order was imposed. Plantations reopened under forced labor policies that resembled slavery in practice, though not in name. The question of freedom remained unresolved. Power concentrated in new hands. Louverture governed with authority and caution. He balanced European diplomacy with internal control. He knew the empires were watching, waiting for weakness. In France, another turn was coming. Napoleon Bonaparte rose to power. His vision did not include black autonomy. He needed sugar. He needed control. He planned to restore slavery and rebuild the colonial machine. In 1802, a massive French expedition landed in Saint-Domingue. Thousands of troops, experienced officers, clear orders. The war entered its final phase. French forces promised peace and betrayed it. Leaders were arrested under false terms. Louverture was captured and shipped to France. He died in a cold prison far from the land he had shaped. But the revolution did not die with him. Jean-Jacques Dessalines took command. The war hardened. Mercy disappeared. This was no longer about reform or negotiation. It was about survival. Yellow fever returned. French ranks collapsed again. Morale broke. Discipline failed. At Vertiers in 1803, French forces were defeated decisively. In January 1804, Haiti declared independence. The first Black Republic was born. The only successful slave revolution in history had succeeded. But victory did not bring peace. It brought fear. Every slaveholding society understood what had happened. If it could happen here, it could happen anywhere. Haiti was not just a nation. It was a warning. The world would respond accordingly. And it would not take long. Chapter 2. Escalation and reversal. Independence was declared, but freedom was not accepted. Haiti existed on paper, but not in the world's systems. No major power recognized the new nation. Trade routes closed. Diplomacy stopped. Silence became policy. The message was clear. A Black Republic born from enslaved people was unacceptable. France refused recognition outright. Other European powers followed. The United States watched closely, fearful of the example Haiti set for its own enslaved population. Isolation was not accidental. It was coordinated. Haiti inherited devastation. Plantations were burned. Infrastructure was shattered. The population was exhausted from years of war. Yet the new state was expected to survive without partners, credit, or protection. Leadership faced impossible choices. Jean-Jacques Dessalines ruled with urgency and fear. He understood the threat of invasion. He believed survival required strength, unity, and control. His policies were harsh. His rule was short. In 1806, he was assassinated by internal rivals. The country fractured. Northern Haiti fell under a monarchy led by Henri Christophe. The South became a republic under Alexandre Pétion. Two systems, two visions, both under pressure. Christophe pursued order and defense. He built fortresses. He enforced labor systems tied to agriculture and exports. Freedom existed, but it was constrained. He believed discipline was the price of survival. Pétion emphasized land redistribution. Former soldiers became small farmers. Exports declined. Independence spread, but revenue collapsed. The state weakened financially. Both paths struggled. France waited. In 1825, France returned not with troops at first, but with demands. Warships anchored off the coast. Cannons visible. Diplomacy backed by force. France offered recognition on one condition. Haiti would pay an indemnity for the loss of enslaved people and plantations. The former enslavers demanded compensation from the formerly enslaved. The amount was staggering, 150 million francs, a sum impossible for Haiti to pay. But refusal meant invasion. Haiti agreed. This decision reshaped the nation's future more than any battle. To pay France, Haiti borrowed money from French banks. High interest, punishing terms, debt locked in. Recognition came, but freedom was now mortgaged. For decades, Haiti sent its wealth abroad. Taxes extracted from peasants, coffee exports prioritized over local needs, roads, schools, hospitals delayed or abandoned. Debt payments came first. This was not accidental, it was designed. Political instability followed. Presidents rose and fell. Coups became common. Power concentrated in elites who controlled trade and debt negotiations. Rural communities carried the burden. Foreign powers intervened repeatedly. Gunboats enforced payments. Diplomacy served creditors. Haiti was independent in name, constrained in reality. The United States entered more directly in the early 20th century. In 1915, American forces occupied Haiti. Official reasons cited instability. Unofficial goals included protecting financial interests and controlling customs revenue. The occupation lasted until 1934. During this period, Haitian sovereignty was openly compromised. The Constitution was rewritten, forced labor returned under new language, resistance was crushed violently. Rural fighters known as cacos were hunted down. The occupation reshaped institutions, it centralized power. It trained security forces that would later be used against the population. It extracted resources while claiming modernization. When American forces left, the structures they built remained. Debt continued, political violence persisted, foreign influence never fully retreated. Throughout the 20th century, Haiti cycled through authoritarian rule, fragile democracy, and external pressure. Leaders promised reform, many failed, some were removed. Others were supported because they served outside interests. The legacy of punishment endured. Poverty was not the result of laziness or failure. It was engineered through isolation, debt, and intervention. The cost of freedom was made permanent. Yet Haiti did not disappear. Culture survived. Language held. Religion adapted. Memory endured. The revolution was not erased. It was carried quietly, sometimes dangerously. Every uprising elsewhere in the Americas echoed Haiti's example. Every demand for freedom carried its shadow. Haiti paid the price so others could claim ignorance. The world never forgave Haiti for proving slavery could be defeated. And Haiti never forgot. But survival under punishment creates scars. As the modern era approached, the question sharpened. How long can a nation carry the cost of a freedom the world refused to honor? The answer would be tested again, and soon the consequences would come due. Chapter 3, Consequences and Legacy. By the time the 20th century reached its midpoint, Haiti had already paid for its freedom many times over. The indemnity to France drained the nation for more than a century. Even after the final payment, the damage remained embedded in institutions, land ownership, and trust. Debt ended, but dependency did not. Rural Haiti carried the weight. Small farmers produced coffee and food while receiving little protection or investment. Roads were poor, schools were scarce, healthcare barely reached the countryside. The state collected what it could and returned little. Survival became local and communal. Urban elites benefited from trade and foreign relationships. Power clustered around ports, banks, and government offices. Politics became a competition for access, not service. This divide hardened over generations. Foreign intervention never truly stopped. Aid arrived with conditions. Loans arrived with oversight. Decisions were shaped abroad even when signed locally. Haiti was managed, not partnered. In the mid-20th century, authoritarian rule deepened the wound. The Duvalier era used fear as governance. Security forces became instruments of control. Dissent was punished. Foreign governments tolerated abuse in exchange for stability and alignment. The population endured again. When dictatorship fell, expectations rose. Democracy promised repair. Elections returned hope, but institutions weakened by decades of extraction and violence struggled to deliver. Corruption flourished where accountability was thin. International actors preached reform while maintaining leverage. Disasters exposed the cost of neglect. Earthquakes, hurricanes, floods, each event turned vulnerability into catastrophe. Infrastructure failures multiplied harm. Aid flowed in bursts, then receded. Rebuilding stalled. The revolution was still remembered, but often distorted. Outside narratives framed Haiti as broken, cursed, or incapable. Rarely was the punishment acknowledged. Rarely was the cost traced back to the moment Haiti refused to remain enslaved. Inside the country, memory lived differently. The revolution was not mythology. It was lineage. It was names passed down. It was the knowledge that survival itself was resistance. Language preserved this truth. Creole held history when official records did not. Religion carried memory when institutions failed. Music, ritual, and story reinforced identity under pressure. Haiti did not forget who it was. Yet the burden of proof never lifted. Haiti was required to succeed without margin for error. Every failure was blamed on culture. Every crisis was treated as proof of inferiority. The original crime, freedom, was never forgiven. In the modern global order, Haiti remains constrained by the past. Trade disadvantages persist. Debt cycles repeat under new labels. Political interference continues under new language. punishment adapts. And still Haiti exists. It exists because it was born in resistance, because its foundation was not permission, but defiance. Because survival was learned early and practiced daily. The revolution did not end in 1804. It transformed. It became endurance. It became adaptation. It became the refusal to disappear. But endurance is not justice. The legacy of Haiti's revolution forces a question the world avoids. What does freedom mean if it is punished across centuries? What does independence mean if sovereignty is conditional? This is not only Haiti's history, it is a mirror. Haiti proved slavery could be destroyed. The world responded by making sure the victory was never allowed to look complete. Today, Haiti stands as evidence, not of failure, but of cost. The cost imposed when an enslaved people broke the rules of empire. The revolution succeeded. The punishment followed. And it never truly stopped.